I call this meeting to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the September 8th, 2023 meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meetings are approved. We now turn to the report of the university. Good morning, everyone. This morning, as every morning I come to Hannah, I wave at the registrar. Steve Shablin serves as university registrar with a great group of folks, many of whom have been at the university for 15 or 20 years. And the good news is, Steve waves back. The report of the university since our last Board of Trustees meeting has been eventful. World and local events have seemed endless and sometimes collisional. But the work of the university, exemplified by the work of our registrar, continues. Steve waves at me from the office and then goes back to the duties of ensuring registration, class changes, and enrollment in spring classes, which, reminder, begins on Monday. Even as some days seem long, the academic season has moved forward. Our students are learning, and earlier this week, the provost and I celebrated faculty promotion and tenure. Yesterday, the trustees and senior administrators toured the campus. We saw the places and spaces that we are building and the places we are planning. And we fed a newborn calf at the dairy barn. Students and staff met us at the greenhouse and told us of their projects and aspirations. It was a good day. So much of the news of the university is good, yet it can feel that there are weighty anchors on our upward ascent. Spartans, today we are holding these true truths, that there is good that is happening, but there are also matters arising that create pain and harm. I have hope for tomorrow because of our faculty, staff, and students, and their daily good work and striving that ensures our university mission of education, research, and outreach with impact is met. Supporting MSU's work is the financial position of the university. Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer Lisa Frace and her team have prepared audited financial reports for the board review. And while we enjoy a strong balance sheet and bond credit rating, primarily because of the value of the endowment, our operating margins are thin, depending as they do primarily on tuition and enrollment. The administration and board scrutinize every project to ensure that the priorities align to the needs of the campus. Among our priorities are a series of building projects, making this among the most ambitious times in the university's history. Rising from the ground this morning are our Multicultural Center and the Student Health and Wellness Center. Each have been designed with student voices and interests and map onto our strategic priority of student success. In addition, the board will be voting on our capital outlay five-year plan, including recommendations to the state regarding an engineering and digital innovation center, which will provide opportunity for 1,000 new undergraduates and 400 new graduate students. And they've considered plans to proceed on our state-of-the-art dairy facility that is funded in part by the state of Michigan on behalf of a dairy industry representing 900 dairy farms, 97% of which are family-owned, and new greenhouses to support our world-class plant sciences. These buildings and our aspirations are vacant, however, if we do not do the work to enable our community to feel safe and welcomed across campus. Toward our shared goal of a safe community, last week we released an after-action review by the independent consulting firm SRMC regarding the response of the university to the violence on our campus on February 13th. The university will continue to put safety and educational measures into place as recommended in that report and through community feedback. Safety has seemed elusive to members on our campus who have been touched directly by the escalating war in the Middle East. I thank Yael Aronoff and Mahmoud Khalil for gathering the university together in the teaching and learning series, Conversations on Anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. MSU is a diverse community that embraces the possibility for change because of our engagement with others. Part of that change is envisioned by the recent Summit on Black Equity by 2030 and the work we do as a consequence of these gatherings. The work of our physical campus and individual psychological safety is ongoing, knowing that a university can never ensure, but rather do all we can to best enable individual growth and understanding. And in so doing, enable student, staff, and employee success. Transformational buildings and intentional work on the diverse university as a place of belonging opens opportunities for incoming students, as does the newly announced Spartan Tuition Advantage. MSU was one of the first universities to offer tuition-free scholarships to Michigan residents, and once again, we are redefining college access with this expanded program. The Spartan Tuition Advantage program reduces the financial barriers that can stand between students and their future success through a world-class higher education degree. And the university is grateful to Provost Yitzko and his office for leadership on this matter. Since the board last met, I had the opportunity to tour MSU and stakeholder facilities around Midland and Bay City. So many students, families, and businesses are being served by our 4-H and Extension and MSU Extension folks in these communities. And I'm so impressed by the research happening at places like the Axia Institute on MSU's St. Andrews campus in Midland, which focuses on value change solutions. And the Saginaw Valley Research and Extension Center in Frankenmuth, with its focus on dry beans, sugar beets, and wheat. Before I close, I want to congratulate our women's soccer team for earning their second consecutive Big Ten title. Congratulations, too, to our volleyball team, which continues to build excitement for the program and recently set an attendance record. And speaking of athletic feats, I want to thank all the ROTC members from both MSU and the University of Michigan who ran the game ball between Ann Arbor and MSU and Alex's great state race last Friday. Finally, I want to thank two influential members of our university community. First, Dr. Linda Green for her service as Dean of the MSU College of Law. Dean Green is the inaugural dean following the college's full integration into MSU and has decided to step down from her role to focus on her scholarship and writing at the start of next year, including the finishing of her upcoming book on Thurgood Marshall. Dean Green, thank you for your service to the college and the university. And on behalf of a grateful university, I thank Kathy Wilbur, Senior Vice President for Government Relations, who after an accomplished and extensive 45-year career, with more than 22 years in higher education administration, announced she will be retiring in January. Kathy has provided guidance and legislative strategy for many of our key initiatives, including the dairy facilities, greenhouses, the Engineering and Digital Innovation Center, EFRIB, and the Center for to Prevent Mass Violence. Kathy also served on the Board of Trustees and is a loyal Spartan with 3 degrees from MSU. Thank you, Kathy, for your contributions to your beloved alma mater. Let me end by saying thank you again to Steve Shablin for the work that he does and for waving. Thank you for exemplifying the daily work of individual Spartans who continue to do the good work of the university in the face of challenging circumstances. Thank you to our students, faculty leaders, and our incredible staff. The university endures because individually and collectively we come together around that which is necessary to change the world we found and make it better for those who come in our footsteps. I now call upon Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher to invite public participation on items germane to the agenda.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. We'll now proceed to the public participation on items germane to the agenda portion of the meeting. Each individual who's signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We'll now hear from William Rogers, who is the sole item that is germane to the agenda. William, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think I got pushed to a different place on the agenda than what I planned on being. But my name is Bill Rogers. I'm a farmer from about 12 miles south of here. Over the course of 60 years, I've raised over 3,000 head of cattle. I haven't public spoken in a while, and it gets me a little nervous. I've been really close to MSU. I have had 3 family members that graduated from the Ag Division. I'm bringing you a problem. I hope I'm bringing you a solution. We have problems in the ag community that we don't have veterinaries that will come out to the farm. In MSU here now, you have small animal, you have horse, and then you have the in-between, which are the animals that I'm talking about, the meat animals, the pigs, the cows, whatever. If they get sick, you can't bring them to MSU. You can't physically pick up a cow that weighs 2,000 pounds, put her in a trailer, and bring her here for a vet. And we don't have anybody in Ingham County that will come to the farm. We've got all kinds of veterinaries, but we don't have any that will service this community. We're not the only ones with a problem. Indiana's got a problem. Kentucky's got a problem. Senator Stabenow has actually submitted a Senate bill to get tuition refund, to get more people in this arena. And I know you're looking for a dean for this, so I'm hoping that maybe you can talk and find a dean that can address this, because it's terrible. It's terrible when you lose animals. It's like losing a family member. I personally lost like 30 head in the spring. You know, that's bad. I can tell you about farmers here in Ingham County that lost 60 all at one time. And, you know, that can devastate a farm. We need that, whatever it takes to make it happen. And I'm going to give you a little bit of history. MSU, years ago, used to send their vet students out into Ingham County. That might be a plausible thing that might work. But it's terrible to not be able to reach out and touch the meds you need and what have you. What we've gotten into, I've heard stories of people with 2,000 head of cattle that are medicating their cattle with no veterinary experience, formal. They're doing it because they have to, you know. I was pushed into that, and that's a terrible way to be when you look at your animal and you say, well, what am I going to do? I can't get a vet here to take care of it. Do I medicate it with what I've got and hope it comes out? Thank you for your time, and if you've got any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Interim President Woodruff, that concludes this portion.
I now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to introduce the research presentation for this meeting.
Good morning. I'd like to tell a story today, I think, about something that's very important at MSU, and that is our basic research in veterinary medicine. It is a real highlight of the institution. MSU is unique in that we have 2 medical schools, an allopathic and an osteopathic medical school, a college of nursing, as well as a veterinary school. The opportunities for those health care providers to interact is really something that I think is really emerging as a new field of one health. We look at animals and humans as maybe human medicine. We don't worry about that we consider quite distinct from veterinary medicine. But, in fact, animals suffer many of the same maladies that humans do, cancer, osteoarthritis. And so you're going to hear today some very fundamental research, which I think has great application for animal patients, but also opportunities for translation into human medicine. So our speaker today is Dr. Valerie Johnson. She joined MSU 3 years ago from Colorado State University. She's an assistant professor in small animal critical care. And as you'll learn from her presentation, she also has a strong interest in exotic species and wildlife as well. She earned her PhD in immunology from Colorado State and completed her DVM at Tufts University. While at CSU, she developed new protocols to grow mesenchymal stem cells. These are multipotent stem cells derived from bone marrow, and to apply those in a variety of contexts, and she'll describe that today. Over the past 10 years, she's been investigating the effects of these mesenchymal stem cells as a therapeutic modality for various disease processes, including multidrug-resistant infections, immune-mediated diseases, and arthritis. Her research questions seek to elucidate the mechanism by which these cells exert a therapeutic effect. She's participated in several clinical trials with dogs and exotic species for a variety of inflammatory and infectious diseases. Her current research interests include investigating the potential antiviral effects of mesenchymal stem cells and comparisons of such cells and their therapeutic effects between species. So I'd like to also congratulate her on being awarded a Career Development Award, or a K-12 Award. This is a two-year institutional award to promote collaboration between research institutions. Please welcome Dr. Valerie Johnson.
Hi there. My name is Dr. Valerie Johnson, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all about some of my research, which I'm very excited about. I could talk to you for hours, but luckily they won't let me. So here we go. There we go, if I can figure out how to work the mechanisms. So as was said, my research interests include infection and the immune system as well as inflammatory diseases. And in particular, I wanted to know, can we better harness the immune system to fight off some of those diseases? This slide just shows you why there's a need for such a thing. So in the early 1900s, we discovered antibiotics. It was a great discovery. However, just as soon as we discovered them, the bacteria discovered a way to circumvent them. And so what you're seeing on the top slides, middle and right, are that the incidence of multi-drug resistance infections have increased dramatically over the past 20 to 30 years. And with that increase in multi-drug resistant infections, we've also seen a decline in the production of new antibiotics. Another reason why these infections can be so hard to eradicate is that oftentimes they'll go into a different state and produce a biofilm. So the middle right panel on the bottom shows an electron micrograph of a biofilm infection. And you can see that these bacteria are producing this sticky glycocalyx. And with that, they can stick onto just about any surface. On the bottom right-hand corner, you see a heart valve that has an infection in it. And you can see the patient is deceased because these infections are impossible to eradicate. So my area of interest was, how can we better help the body to eradicate these infections? Because clearly anything we're giving to them, the bacteria find a way around. The area that I have worked in is mesenchymal stem cell therapy. And what these cells are is they are adult-derived stem cells. So we create them from not only bone marrow but also fat and blood. And these cells can turn into a couple different cell types under the right conditions, bone marrow, cartilage, and fat. But they can't turn into every cell of the body like an embryonic stem cell would. And initially, we thought that by giving these cells, we'd put them in a joint and they'd turn into cartilage, but we found that that wasn't true. We found that actually they had effects on the cells of the immune system in the body, and that when we put them into an animal, they actually did various things to the immune system depending on the situation they found themselves in. So we asked the question, would they be effective in a biofilm infection, as they've been demonstrated to show some antibacterial activity? So this mouse model that we used, we take a piece of surgical mesh and we put some bacteria on it and put it right under the skin of the mouse. They develop a little abscess. and these abscesses don't respond to any therapy at all. You can give them antibiotics all day long. So we hypothesized that if we took these cells and we put them in with some substances that made them think they were in an infected environment, that they then might be pre-activated and better able to fight these infections. So in the middle right panel on the slide, you can see two mice. The bacteria is bioluminescent. You can see it in blue. And the mouse on the left got antibiotics. The mouse on the right got activated stem cells and antibiotics. You can see that mouse has completely cleared this infection that are very difficult to clear. On the bottom left-hand corner, you see, again, two mice. The one on the left got activated stem cells, and the one on the right got resting stem cells. And the stem cells are labeled in red. So you can see a lot of them are in the lungs because that's where they first go when you inject them IV. But in the animal that got activated stem cells, you can see that there's a lot of them right around that circle, which is the area of the wound, whereas in the animals that got resting stem cells, there's not quite as many there. So we think that the reason why these stem cells work so well is, one, they were better attracted to the area of infection. Two, they cause the immune system to better be able to take up, our white blood cells rather, to better take up these bacteria and kill them. They also change some of the cells from an inflammatory to an anti-inflammatory or wound healing phenotype, so helps to heal the wound after, and they also directly killed the bacteria. This next slide has a little bit of graphic pictures, so prepare yourself. Next, we wanted to see if it worked in multi-drug-resistant infections. And these dogs that you see on the right are dogs that came to our hospital at the end of their rope. They had infections which no antibiotic could treat, and they were enrolled in my clinical trial. And in my clinical trial, we accepted dogs who had one or more multi-drug-resistant infections for which current therapeutics were not having any effect. The dog at the top actually had a bone plate which couldn't be removed. It kept getting infected and breaking open. The next step would be amputation, but he couldn't have his limb amputated, so he was facing euthanasia. We were able to clear up that wound with intravenous activated stem cells, and you can see in the bottom two panels that it was effective as well. And indeed, overall, we cleared up completely 75% of the really bad things that were presented to us, and all animals showed clinical improvement. So then we thought, if we're treating wounds and we really want the stem cells at the site of the wounds, why can't we put them right there? However, when you do that, they all kind of leak out. We tried. So our next project, and this is the subject of my K award, is to try and develop what we call a living bandage. So this bandage would be composed of a biomaterial that is compatible with the tissues and would eventually dissolve. But in that material, we insert living stem cells. And so in there, they can sit, they can migrate out to where they need to go, but they don't just run out of the wound. Now, working with some other researchers around this campus, I discovered that many other people had similar ideas, and they've been using nanoparticles that had antibacterial activity and also oxygen-releasing activity because wounds need oxygen to heal. So our idea was, could we combine these technologies, put them together in this bandage, and then engineer a layer of skin cells over them so that the wound wouldn't be prone to reinfection and would indeed help heal. So this is still in the very early stages, but we're very excited about it. The other part of my work, as has already been mentioned, is osteoarthritis. And the reason that we think stem cells would work in osteoarthritis is because it's a very inflammatory condition. It is currently in the top five leading disabilities in the U.S. today, and it has a very complex physiology that involves severe inflammation not only at the joint but throughout the body. Currently, the only therapeutics that we have for it are listed in black, and that is physical therapy, anti-inflammatory medications, pain medications, and ultimately joint replacement. So there's no way to actually treat this disease without just treating it symptomatically. Mesenchymal stem cells are a new therapy that we propose to use to treat this disease. We first treated the video's not playing. Oh, there we go. We first tried this in a guinea pig model of naturally occurring arthritis. They develop arthritis by 2 years of age, and we measured their ability to run on this treadmill. We found that they could run better, faster, and had increased mobility. How did we get there from there to elephants and giraffes? Well, the local zoo caught wind of a trial we had done in dogs with naturally occurring arthritis where they did very well and said, we have this elephant. So we tried using stem cells in this elephant. technologically impaired here. I can't advance my slide. There we go. So this is an elephant at the zoo who had a previous injury to the knee. And in this video, you can see that she is unable to even bend that knee. She swings it around and is having a really hard time getting around. The picture on the right is a thermogram showing severe inflammation in the hip and the knee. We gave this elephant stem cells. And again, can't advance my slide. I swear I know how to do this. Okay. So in this video, you can see 3 months after stem cell treatment, she's walking out onto exhibit. And she stops. Oh, there she goes. And she's bending her knee 100% of the time. So we did end up treating her again about a year later as it started to get worse again, and she is still currently living at the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo in Colorado. The other thing that I was interested in is, does it have an effect on viral diseases? And so there's a viral disease in elephants, which is highly fatal and is a big problem in zoos and in the wild, for which these animals get intensive treatment and still 50% of them die. So we looked at this viral model in cell culture and found that stem cells did indeed decrease lysis of cells in the lab. We then moved on to a clinical trial in elephants. This is an elephant who was very sick. We didn't think she was going to make it. She received 2 stem cell treatments and the standard of care, which is intensive treatment. And she also is alive and healthy today, living at Oklahoma City Zoo. I do have a smattering of other things going on, and more than I can even tell you in 8 minutes. Our other clinical trial that we have ongoing right now is looking at the effect of stem cells in pancreatitis in dogs, which is a very inflammatory condition in both dogs and humans, for whom right now you treat only with supportive care, and it still people and animals die from it. So we've only treated a couple of dogs so far, but it's going well so far, and I'll have more to report later. We also are working with a company who has developed a diagnostic test for both infection and ability of the wound to heal, and it's being used in humans, and they wanted to know, could we use it in dogs? It's a bedside test, literally looks like a COVID test, and can give you information on how to treat the wound. So that's ongoing as well. So in summary, we think that mesenchymal cells have a variety of applications, both in infections, viral and bacterial, and in osteoarthritis and other inflammatory diseases as well. They can be used in a variety of species, and we're currently trying to compare the action of stem cells from different species, as well as working on our living bandage and many other things. All this research doesn't happen without a lot of help, and this is just a list of some of the researchers and technical people who have helped me in this journey along the way, and a couple of lovely ladies from my lab. And with that, I will take any questions.
Dr. John?
Yes.
In your presentation that you're working with UCLA to try it on humans, what's the time frame for this to be applicable?
Humans? That's a great question. The work that I'm doing with UCLA, because this is not an FDA-approved drug for this application, it has to go through FDA approval. So right now what we're trying to do is get it approved for compassionate care. So these are people who have multi-drug-resistant infections for which there is no treatment, and they will go to hospice. And so trying it in this group of people, we've proved its safety in animals and are on the way to proving its safety in people. There have been tons of trials done. So right now we're trying to get that paperwork done, and we're hoping, you know, within the next 6 months or so that we'll be able to try it out in some people that don't have any other options. And from there we can continue to give evidence to the FDA. This is a very useful and very innovative treatment and is safe. And hopefully, I would say, you know, these things take a lot of time. But I would say, I would hope within the next 5 years, we would be able to get this out as a treatment.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Any
other questions?
From the board? Dr. Johnson, we thank you for your path-breaking translational research.
Yeah.
And thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I now call upon Interim Provost Yitzko to present the personnel actions.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the October 2023 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments. Artem Rugovsky, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Pathobiology, Diagnostic Investigation in the College of Veterinary Medicine, with tenure, effective December 15, 2023. The action includes the recommendation of Harlan Barnett, Interim Head Football Coach, Department of Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract with effective dates of September 12, 2023 through March 31, 2024. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now move to the Board of Trustees committee reports and other items regarding board approval. Trustee Rima Vassar will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Good morning. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby adopts the 2025 Capital Outlay Project Request and 5-Year Capital Outlay Plan included as Attachments A heretofore.
We have a motion. Do we have support?
Support.
Barb Krantz is here for discussion.
Good morning. The state of Michigan process requires that public universities and community colleges annually submit their capital 5-year capital plan. We also have an opportunity to present or to request funding from the state for one capital project that is part of that plan. As was mentioned earlier by President Woodruff, the Engineering Digital Innovation Center is being recommended for submitting to the state of Michigan. The engineering project, the EDIC, is a new center that will support the emergence of a strong and transformative ecosystem focused on the convergence of digital and physical technologies. It will bring together a range of teaching, learning, and research activities across multiple colleges and disciplines to create an energized, innovative, and entrepreneurial community focused on the digital futures. The project will also support increased enrollment both in the undergraduate and graduate level and focused on computational and digital literacy disciplines and in graduate-related programs. It would also equip the MSU graduates with skills in computational sciences and digital literacy necessary for postgraduate success. And we look forward to it becoming MSU's Center of Excellence in Advanced Manufacturing, Material Science, Ultrafast Science, and quantum computing, including heterogeneous microelectronic technologies. Again, it's a multi-college effort, and we're looking forward to state cost participation with that. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. All those, is there any discussion? Yes,
I would just have one item. Barb, yes. You did a great job. We had a tour yesterday, so we saw the renderings, but I would like Dr. Woodruff to talk about the EDIC project, because you bring the excitement and life to it.
Well, very good. It's something I love talking about, which is that Michigan State University has innovated in education 2 times in the past, and now this will be the 3rd revolution in education, and this is where we are inverting the college model. So instead of a student going to a college, the colleges will come to students. And as we enter into the new generation of digital innovation, more and more students across multiple disciplines, including the humanities, including communication sciences, need to be part of what it is that we are creating for our future. And so by bringing together 7 colleges, 2 units, including EFRIB, into this new domain, we will attract 1,000 new students to the digital, to their digital futures, and new graduate students who will build the new knowledge for a new generation. There is an estimation that we need 680,000 new jobs in this arena, and this effort will enable a workforce that's going to live long for the state of Michigan and our economic power in the future.
Thank you.
That was even better yesterday when the rain.
Well, that's fine, but you get light.
I can go even further. So, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Thank you.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Dairy Facility Research and Teaching and Learning.
We have a motion. Do we have support?
Support.
I believe George Smith is here to talk. Now, George talks really well. I also can, you know, wax very poetic about this, but George does really well.
I know you can, Interim President Woodruff. Chairperson Vassar, Interim President Woodruff, members of the board, on behalf of the administration of the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, College of Veterinary Medicine, and the entire Michigan agricultural community, it is my extreme pleasure to be here to speak on behalf of the resolution to start construction of the new dairy teaching and learning facility. Dairy is the number one contributor to the agriculture economy in the state of Michigan. However, that future is in jeopardy. Our dairy industry is suffering a whole host of challenges related to a workforce, including large animal veterinarians, as we heard about previously, including challenges related to ensuring a secure future in terms of environmental sustainability, and in terms of securing a bright future in terms of economic viability. This vision for this new facility, which will be made possible through the creative talents and ingenuity of our faculty here at Michigan State University, will create a new path forward for our dairy industry, new facilities to train that next generation workforce, new facilities with a controlled environment and state-of-the-art technology to introduce students that wouldn't otherwise be interested in large animal veterinary medicine to careers in large animal veterinary medicine, to help our producers continue to lead the country in milk production per cow, but more importantly, to contribute to the goals of the state of Michigan in terms of the healthy climate plan and transition to renewable energy. A big focus on this project and really what helped us sell it with your support and our stakeholders' support to our legislature was the focus on environmental sustainability. We have a vision for working to scale technology for anaerobic digestion, basically to convert manure into renewable natural gas that can be sold at a premium for dairy farms of all sizes. A vision to separate the nutrients out of the manure, the nitrogen and phosphorus, providing another source of revenue for our dairy producers and reducing the environmental impact of manure being spread on fields. A vision for harvesting clean water from dairy facilities and reusing that water in an efficient fashion to irrigate crops. And finally, and very significantly, a vision for really assessing the environmental impact and carbon footprint of dairy farms to learn what that carbon footprint is and look at strategies to reduce the carbon footprint and maybe create a model for the future. We have dairy farms that are carbon neutral or even carbon positive. Think about the benefits of that to society. Think about the benefits to our producers. So as you can tell, I'm really excited about this project and appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of it today.
Thank you.
That was intellectually rousing. Thank you, George. Any other discussion? Well, it is my privilege to call for this vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Okay, good job.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Dairy Facility Research and Teaching and Learning. The next one. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on the last one, well, no, it's not the last one. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the establishment of the Department of Dermatology, the Department of Radiation Oncology, the Department of Pathology, and the...
She missed two. That's all right. We'll do this, and then we'll go back. That's all right. That's all right.
Wait. Did I miss this one? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm glad, because that one, I could not pronounce that next word that was coming. So, good job, Dennis. No, that's not going to be for me. Good luck, Dennis. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Greenhouses Renovation and Addition, Research Expansion and Learning.
We have a motion. Is there support?
Support.
George, come back. Another intellectually rousing rendition of why we're going to do the
meeting. Well, thank you for the opportunity again. This is a request absolutely critical to our entire Michigan agricultural community and really critical to the future of Michigan State University and our excellence in plant sciences. Our greenhouse facilities are directly or indirectly linked to all of the 300-plus commodities in the state of Michigan. They are the foundation of our plant science research programs. That's where research starts before it ever goes out into the field and ultimately leads to application on farm. Our current greenhouses need a lot of help. Two-thirds built between 1955 and 1978. You saw that story yesterday, and I know some of you have been on tours previously. Couldn't be more excited that we're in a position to upgrade those facilities, both through renovation and new construction, again, made possible by an investment from the state of Michigan with your support that had the support of the entire agricultural community, recognizing that their future and food security in general for this country and beyond is dependent on research conducted in those greenhouses. And so you look at the impact in the future, whether we're talking about plant breeding for crops that have more nutritive value or resistant to climate change, whether you're talking about research on control of weeds and resistance of weeds to chemicals, whether you're looking at research on biological control for pests and pathogens, it all starts in the greenhouses. And my hope, and I know you share that hope, is we will continue to excel and lead the nation in plant science research. And we can't do that without this investment in greenhouse facilities and the headhouse and necessary support structure to support all the great research that takes place in those greenhouses.
Bravo. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Congratulations.
Okay, so I did not read my script beforehand. A couple of things happened this week, so I was a little distracted. So the script, I should have edited ahead of time, so I apologize. I'm going to try it one more time. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Biomedical Animal Resources. Thank you for the edit. And I think that's it.
Very good. We have a motion. Is there support?
Support.
Doug Gage, would you please
speak
to this matter?
So this is a project that's been underway for more than 2 years. And it was led initially by a fantastic recruit in the Global Impact Initiative, Dr. Anna Moore, who we recruited from Mass General Hospital and Harvard University. She was successful in applying for a very competitive facility grant from NIH called the CO6 grant. And it's really really aligned with our strategic plan. We have to be, in order to really provide our researchers with the ability to compete, they have to have access to state-of-the-art equipment. The facility is going to be located in the clinical center, and we hope to build an imaging suite around this. Dr. Moore and Dr. Beauchamp were successful in convincing the Siemens Corporation to donate a $5 million PET MR instrument. It'll be a really great opportunity for our faculty, graduate students, and postdocs to really develop some new innovations. Importantly, our Henry Ford colleagues are also quite interested in this. So I think that's another way we're going to bring together some great new research.
Very good. Thank you, Doug. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
That concludes my report.
Thank you. I now call upon Trustee Dennis Denno to present the Committee on Academic Affairs report.
Thank you. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the establishment of the Department of Dermatology, the Department of Radiation Oncology, the Department of Pathology, the Department of
Otolaryngology.
What he said, which I would call head and neck surgery, the Department of Urology, and the Department of Neurosurgery at the MSU College of Human Medicine.
Thank you. Is there support for this motion?
Support.
I would now like to note that EVP Dr. Norm Beauchamp is available to discuss.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The color of your skin and the county in which you're born in Michigan determine how long you live. People struggling with disease and lives lost every day. To do better, there's a structure. It's called the Academic Medical Department. It's a place where clinicians can seek to identify what can't they do for people, where researchers can do the same, where they can come together, they can find solutions, and they can meet those unmet needs. Some examples: brain cancer, throat cancer, breast cancer, skin cancer, women's health. Michigan State was unique in the Big Ten that we didn't have the departments that came together to do that work. A huge disadvantage. Six departments. Because of the relationship with Henry Ford and the work that we've done, we've now added close to 300 faculty that together are focusing on this work, and they came to Michigan State at no cost to Michigan State, but because they saw the importance of our mission and the desire to partner. So this is a quantum step forward, and a really important piece of this is this then is a place for our doctors and nurses and researchers to train to create the better tomorrow. There's a lot of people to thank about for this. I'd like to acknowledge Aaron Sousa, the Dean of the College of Human Medicine, who carried so much weight. I called on my colleague, the Provost, to rally in a huge way in a very short amount of time. So thank you. Thank you for that. Sandy Pierce, who is our trustee, who sat on the board of Henry Ford for a long time and helped shape it into a place that's remarkable. Our president has been very helpful supporting these efforts. And the chair of the STERCO partnership, the representative from Michigan State, has been Chair Vassar, who's played a pivotal role. So it's a nice example of a university working together to do good. It happens.
Very good. Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Thank you.
This concludes my report. Thank you.
Trustee Dan Kelly will now present the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance report.
Thank you, and good morning. The Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee met and reviewed the MSU staff, met with MSU staff and university external auditors, Plant Moran, the 2022-23 audit financial statements. The university received a clean opinion from the auditors, which indicates that MSU followed accounting rules appropriately and that the financial reports are an accurate representation of MSU's financial position as of June 30, 2023. No significant changes were made to Plant Moran's audit approach, which were reviewed by the committee prior to audit work commencing. No significant adjustments were proposed during the audit, and no material weaknesses in the internal controls or accounting policies and procedures were noted. Based upon this review and report, action is now recommended to make official the June 30, 2023 financial statements of the university. Therefore, as chairperson of the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee, I move that the board accept the audited financial statements for the year ending June 30th, 2023.
Thank you. There's a motion on the table. Is there support?
Support.
And VP of Finance, Lisa Frace, is available if there's any questions.
Good morning, trustees. I'm pleased to present the financial reports for fiscal year 2023. As Vice Chair Kelly has indicated, they are represent a clean audit and fairly present the financial position of the institution. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following option agreement with Scion Plasma, LLC.
A motion has been put on the table. Is there support?
Support.
Again.
Any further discussion?
Yeah.
How about that one?
Yeah.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Trustee Kelly Tebay will now present the Committee on Student Life and Culture report.
Thank you. Senior Vice President Benny Gore provided us updates on the student rights and responsibilities that they've been working on that we should be getting next year, and also an update on the recreation, sports, and fitness, which we were told that they are basically bursting at the seams. So we're excited to have the new health and wellness center being built. So That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher will invite public participation on other items.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. We'll now proceed to the public participation on items not germane to the agenda portion of the meeting. Each individual who signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We'll now hear from Amanda Tomashow, followed by Angelica Martinez-McGee. Amanda? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I'm an MSU alumni, and for most of my life, before I even became a student on this campus, loving MSU was a part of my personality. My parents raised me on the banks of the Red Cedar, and I felt safe in my community until an MSU employee hurt me almost a decade ago, and I reported it, but I was dismissed, and he was able to hurt others. Now I can't put on my favorite MSU gear or cheer Go Green, Go White, or even see a Spartan symbol without feeling sad and sick to my stomach. I want to wear my Kelly Green hoodie again, and even more than that, I want to know that the people on this campus are safe. I wish you all felt the same. I wish we're more interested in safety and healing than sports and money and school spirit. Because what is school spirit anyway, when the school you have spirit for keeps showing up in the news for sexual misconduct, consistently sending the message, if you want to cross boundaries, this is the place for you. There have been so many opportunities to reflect and transform, but instead you have continued to employ, recruit, and uplift people that cause harm. You also haven't been fully transparent about your past. Just ask the Attorney General, my sister's survivors who keep coming in here and begging for transparency, or Brenda Tracy. How do you expect us to believe you'll do better in the future? According to the Academic Sexual Misconduct Database's website, there have been over 30 incidents involving people that were paid by MSU where policy violations were found since my report in 2014. By only ever thinking about how to protect yourself, you've allowed faculty member after professor after employee to prey upon students and patients and coworkers and advocates that are trying to help make this place safer than it has been. And while I know it's good that there are more people being held accountable, and it's a sign that more people feel comfortable reporting, it also makes it clear that sexual misconduct has been allowed to persist long after you promised to make this campus safer the first time I stood here years ago. Until you get to the point of zero violence, I'm begging you to please keep trying new things, improving your resources and services, and working to address the underlying campus culture, which is determined by the people who stay and have power, not by the students or the visitors who come and go. Please really think about what it means to be a safe campus. Imagine what it looks like. Imagine the details. How do the interactions between employees and guest speakers look? How do conversations between board members sound? How do professors treat their students? How do you protect the vulnerable individuals? When someone speaks out about being hurt or violated, how are they received? What types of services, resources, and options are offered to a person if they are harmed? What about the person that did the harming? What are the priorities on a safe campus with a culture of respect, and how do those priorities show up in the budget? You are all trustees. How does your campus safety and culture show up in your current budget? I would hope that your budget would reflect an investment in creating a safe environment for your students and community. However, I worry it would only make it clear that athletics and prestige and bringing in more money are much more important than the safety and dignity of the people on your campus. Please, it's time to change your priorities and actually make this a safer school. I want to be proud to be a Spartan again, and the people that visit this campus, be it once or every day, deserve to feel safe and protected. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. We'll next hear from Angelica Martinez-McGee, followed by Melissa Hudez. Angelica, good morning.
Good morning. My name is not Angelica. Angelica is unable to be here today. She asked me to read a statement on her behalf. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. This is a letter from Rachel Denhollander. Members of the board, it has been disheartening beyond expression to watch the events of the last few months unfold. to see that the exact same breakdowns and failures that led me and my sister to me and my sister's abuse repeated, despite those failures being specifically raised with board members in 2018 and 2019. In an eight-month process that the majority of former board ultimately rejected, I raised, among other issues, the following weaknesses that contributed to my abuse and the abuse of all my sisters. Specifically, a lack of training for the board on proper processes that should be followed in the abuse of abuse allegations, a lack of clear and distinct policies related to ethical violations, Title IX allegations, and employment-related allegations, and knowing which processes to trigger and how to run them. A poor communication channel and structure that intentionally left board members and the MSU president without the knowledge needed to exercise their fiduciary responsibilities when a prominent individual at the university, such as Larry Nassar or Mel Tucker, is accused of abuse or harassment. Contrary to certain board members' claims then and now, this is not an issue of victim protection or Title IX requirements. This is an intentional design flaw that allows leaders to attempt to wash their hands of failure by saying, "We didn't know." In this eight-month process, I put forward multiple models for transparency related to thousands of privileged documents MSU is still hiding. It is not that those models were not available and clear. It is that those models were explicitly rejected. It is not that the timing wasn't right, as one board member put it, justifying the choice to refuse to support reform. Rather, it was that all efforts to comply with the Attorney General and embark on a process for assessment and reform were explicitly rejected. This process can be done with absolute respect for survivor, agency, and safety. This process can be done while fully protecting survivor, medical, and personal information. As an attorney and crisis consultant, I have personally worked on and overseen these processes regularly. Any leader who suggests this is dangerous for survivors is preying on survivors' trauma in order to obtain that outcome that rejects transparency. MSU had the opportunity to address these failures in 2018 and 2019 and explicitly rejected accountability and reform. But with the resurfacing once again of the same failures we warned would repeat, you have another opportunity to do what is right. Release the documents to the Attorney General, take the first step, and then let's talk about what comes next. When I gave my victim impact statement in court, I pled with you to do better the next time. The prior board rejected that choice, and here we are 4 years later, the same problems. And here you are with another chance. Do it better next time.
Thank you very much. Also, we'll hear from Melissa Hudetz and then Daniel Moore after that.
Okay, I am Melissa.
Yep.
My name is Melissa Hudetz. I stand here today as a sister survivor on behalf of the 546 known victims, their parents, and families. Need I remind you, the sister survivors were on average 14-year-old minors at the time our abuse happened. This abuse has impacted and imploded families and communities alike. The release of documents in cooperation with the Attorney General's investigation has far-reaching implications in our community. And since there's no institutional accountability here, we are here. This time, showing up for our 14-year-old selves, our families, our children, and our community. We have once again sacrificed our mental health to be here because this board continues to perpetuate the cycle of trauma and abuse. At September's meeting, Sandy Pierce summarized the problem, saying, "We're trying to make the best decisions for the current and future university. I have no doubt about that. The problem is, you're talking about the institution, not the students. They are the institution. Doing what's best for MSU has significantly perpetuated the trauma of untold numbers of students. Students are far more likely to experience sexual assault on this campus than gun violence. 1 in 4 report sexual assault on this campus, according to your own No More survey in 2022. That doesn't include unreported assaults by known authority figures, similar to Dean Strampo, Larry Nassar, or Mel Tucker, people still hiding in the shadows under your watch. Diane Byram, what do you have to say for yourself? You knew about Mel Tucker since December 2022 and intentionally hid that information from several current board members. What a dismal lack of leadership
you have shown as a senior member of this board. It's time for you to resign. Brianna Scott, the bickering you claimed that you wanted to end has found you on the front page, launching a public display of animosity toward your fellow board members. Did you or did you not stand in the way of justice for survivors? Did you tell the board to ask Becky Campbell what the sisters think? She actively worked against our vision for the exhibit at the MSU Museum. Becky has no right to speak for us. We're here. We've been here. Dana Nessel's spokesperson told the media Tuesday that she's never wavered in her request for the records of our case. This whole mess sounds a lot like DARVO: deny, attack, reverse victim, and offender. And it sure looks like you've betrayed us again. It's time for you to resign. Board members, what MSU needs is a public vote to release the documents like you promised to do when you were elected. That's your job now. Often those caught up in a cycle of abuse are unaware at first. Open your eyes. If you can't do your job on this board because of fear perpetuated by those representing the university or because of the politics of this board, you're caught up in it. But you have a choice. You have a seat at the table. You have the power. You can break this cycle of abuse and trauma if you have the courage. The truth heals. Thank you.
Melissa, thank you. We'll next hear from Danielle Moore, followed by Valerie Von Frank. Good morning, Danielle.
My name is Dr. Danielle Moore, and I'm a survivor of Larry Nassar. I'm asking the board to please give a plausible explanation as to why you will not release the 6,000 documents, or at the very least, why you will not have an open vote about releasing those documents. At this moment, I see it as pointless to actually ask for the records to be released, as the board has repeatedly and abruptly turned down each and every request, causing even greater trauma. Whatever is in the records must truly be damning. However, I do not believe MSU's name in regards to the Nassar case can become any more tainted. About 3 weeks ago, I was giving a speech at the university in South Carolina about the repeated childhood sexual trauma I experienced by Nassar within one of MSU's clinics. One of the university psychology professors approached me even before I gave my speech. The professor mentioned that Nassar and MSU's willful negligence is now being used as a case study, showcasing how trauma can be amplified when institutions put self-interests above individuals. Within classrooms, MSU's name is now tethered to one of the United States' most prolific sex offenders. MSU has repeatedly inflicted institutional betrayal and trauma. By not releasing the records, the betrayal and trauma continue and add to the ever-growing negativity that is already being taught and formulated in classrooms. Even though my words might sound harsh, I only speak the truth. I sincerely do not want the records released for malice or revenge. They need to be released for healing, transparency, and so others can learn how to stop this type of atrocity from happening again at MSU or elsewhere. No one should suffer from the mental and physical consequences that myself and other survivors have endured. As a result of Nassar's quote-unquote treatment, I have had 7 spinal surgeries. I am always in physical pain, and that pain makes me think of Nassar and MSU's complacency. I myself am a professor, and one of my beliefs as a teacher is that knowledge, even if it's painful and ugly, can bring about positive, powerful change. MSU needs to start looking at the individuals that they hurt and put aside the salvaging of MSU's name or the salvaging of any person who might be in this room today. As a person, a Nassar survivor, and a professor, I hope that MSU will eventually do the right thing. Unfortunately, it has been proven
that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So prove me wrong.
Thank you, Danielle. We'll next hear from Valerie Von Frank, followed by Jennifer Hayes. Valerie?
I really did not want to get up here and talk to you guys again today. My daughter is getting married tomorrow, and I am standing here in this boardroom again because not one of you has the ounce of courage that these women have to be here 5 years after this case and to still be asking you to do the right thing. I cannot believe that you put these women through this again. Do you know what it takes for them to come up here? The physical cost to them? And they do it because it's the right thing. One of them's wearing a tattoo that says, Jen. I can't read it, sweetie.
I speak up for what is right.
None of you have done that. This is not just on the board either. This institution has not changed a lick since Nassar. You guys have still not answered what happened with Alan Haller and Mel Tucker. What actions did the university take? What were they followed up? Did you do anything at all until the newspaper came out, which is exactly what happened with Nassar? Are you covering up another William Strample situation where William Strample just put him back on the job and didn't do anything? Is that what's going on with Mel Tucker? You won't answer that question. I am here. I am supposed to be with my family. My brother, who is not well, I may never see again, is in Plymouth waiting for me to be at this wedding. My youngest daughter, who lives 2,000 miles away, is waiting for me at this wedding. And I am here. Because you know what, Diane Byram? Hell hath no fury like a mother whose child you have hurt. And you, Brianna Scott, have hurt. Because twice you have been the deciding vote in stopping these records from being released. You think this institution has changed? You read Miranda Dunlap's piece last year in the student newspaper, where you made students sit outside the financial aid office who were trying to go to the Center for Survivors, sexual abuse victims. You look at the question that your institution texted her in class, asking her in an email, what did your rapist sound like while he was raping you? If you people don't know this, shame on you. This institution is corrupt. It has not done what it needs to do. It doesn't respect the vulnerable. It doesn't respect minorities. You have racism on campus that you have not addressed. You have a picture of Hitler in your stadium. And what are you doing about it?
Thank you, Valerie. We'll next hear from Jennifer Hayes, followed by Stephen Patterson. Jennifer? Jennifer Hayes. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, I'm Jennifer Hayes, an MSU alumni, a past MSU varsity athlete, and MSU coach. I am also a sexual assault survivor of Larry. MSU follows a pattern of abuse when they are put in the corner with a problem. It's called DARVO. We've heard it already this morning. Named by a truly esteemed researcher, Jennifer Fried, it stands for Defend, Attack, and Reverse Victim and Offender.
We, the 546 survivors of the pedophile who worked here for decades, know it well. We were accused of seeking money and enjoying the fame of being victims of lying. That wasn't the public. That didn't come from the public. That came from the university. The university where I spent 5 years and received 2 degrees. That came from this university, which has never, despite the lip service, been held accountable for what happened here, and it still isn't. You can't pay for accountability. You forget so easily. MSU was already under an Office of Civil Rights investigation even before our perpetrator was made public. And then MSU acted when it became public in the news media. The same thing has happened with activist and rape survivor Brenda Tracy. We don't know what the university did or didn't do to make sure that the football coach didn't harm anyone else while the complaint was proceeding. Action followed swiftly after the news became public. Who knew what and when are the questions we have. In that case, and 5 years after our assaulter went to jail. Let's remember what the Attorney General told us in 2019 in an interim, not final, report. It said that the AG had been told the board was ready to fully cooperate with the AG's review. Unfortunately, it continued. The university failed to live up to this pledge. It fails to live up to its pledge by boasting about all the boxes it's ticked under the federal compliance orders that are really just designed to bring the school in compliance with basic minimum requirements of the laws around sexual violence. The university's approach of it's someone else's fault every time something awful happens has to end here and now. For example, blaming a third-party vendor that wasn't a vendor for the Hitler picture in the stadium, or blaming one man for all the victims in our case is a culture problem. Has to end here and now. Release the records. Truth heals. Thank you.
We will next hear from Stephen Patterson, followed by Dr. Christy Poitra. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Steve Patterson, Richland Township, Kalamazoo County, and I'm here today as your friend, and I'm here today to help you get on the right path. You only have to do one thing. Listen to me on this. It's really important. Reopen Kellogg Forest. Kellogg Forest was gifted to MSU in 1929. It's existed as the experimental forest and as a recreational area for 90 years, up until a few years ago when management was changed, and then things really changed. People were discouraged from going there. Photographers were subject to a $50 a day fee and an etiquette policy. It's in the last page of your packets. I hope you have them with you. 17 etiquette rules to follow. The Battle Creek Hunt Club has been going in there for decades. First, they were told they had to pack out the horse manure, and then they were banned completely. These are the people that started the Chef Center, therapeutic riding. First one in the world, world renowned. They're your neighbors down in Kalamazoo County, banned. Then COVID came along, and the main gates were closed to everybody. And we all understood that. But then after COVID, it was still closed. Various excuses were made, none of which added up. Claims of vandalism and problems with photographers and horseback riders. The place is closed, so nothing could have happened there. We have a testimonial. We started a petition. There's 1,000 signatures. And the testimonial that speaks for us, there's dozens of them. I've been going in there for over 40 years, have had several conversations with the manager. I understood when they were harvesting large trees to keep out, and then the excuse was the pandemic. Then he said, hey, it isn't a park. The Kellogg Forest is a very important place. This is a crazy world we live in, and people need these spaces to go and commune with nature, still waters, green pastures, the forest. The parking lot that has been made is a half mile down from the main entrance. It's muddy. It's dangerous because you have to cross a busy two-lane highway. Please reopen the forest. It needs to be done. It was closed under a false pretense. Don't be the same old MSU. This is your first step on the road to wellness. Thank you. Please reopen Kellogg Forest.
We'll next hear from Dr. Christy Poitra, followed by Nathan Fettis. Dr. Poitra? I think we will next... the next speaker is Nathan Fettis, followed by Brianna Markoff. Nathan? Our next speaker then will be Brianna Markoff, followed by Candace Montgomery. Brianna?
Hello. Good morning. My name is Brianna Markoff, and I'm a fourth-year doctoral student in curriculum instruction and teacher education at MSU. I come to you today as a representative of the Graduate Employees Union. I'm holding a petition, which you all also have, with 1,293 signatures requesting that the recreation and wellness fee be made optional for all graduate students. We are delivering it today in the hope that you will decide in our favor prior to charging us this fee next semester. I offer three reasons that graduate students should not be required to pay this fee. First, we can't afford it. Second, we will be unable to use the new facility that the fee is financing. Third, it is not the graduate student's responsibility to finance the university's debt. The recreation and wellness fee is $340 per year. Graduate students cannot afford this fee. The living wage in East Lansing, that is what a single adult would need to make it in order to meet the cost of food, housing, transportation, and other basic necessities in this area, is $32,798 a year, according to the MIT living wage calculator. Most graduate students make well below the cost of living here. For example, a graduate assistant paid at the university minimum at level two, working fall and spring semester, will make $21,521 a year. Even with access to an additional $7,000 of summer funding, which is not guaranteed, this student would only make $28,529, coming in for over $4,000 short of what is needed to survive here. Graduate students aren't making enough to afford basic necessities. We should not be subjected to additional fees taken out of our already limited pay. Though some graduate students might take on extra work to try to make ends meet, international students are forbidden by federal law from doing so, so this is especially burdensome to them. Because teaching assistants are already exempt from this fee, research assistants and graduate assistants, already our lowest paid workers, are subjected to this additional cost for a facility they will likely never use. Most graduate students do not use the existing recreation facilities, and very few of us who are here today will have the opportunity to use the new pool that the increased fee is paying for. Even the medical students working all the way out in Grand Rapids are paying this fee despite living and working an hour from this campus. While we appreciate the university's effort to provide access to opportunities for wellness, this fee has the opposite effect as it creates undue stress and burden on workers who are already overworked and underpaid. Opportunities for attending to our health and well-being arise when we can stop work at the reasonable hour, put healthy food on our tables, and sleep well each night without wondering if we'll be able to make rent this month. As inflation has increased, these opportunities have become increasingly rare for many. Please support our wellness by making this fee optional. Finally, it is not graduate students' responsibility to finance the university's debt. Once again, we implore you to support our health and wellness by making this fee optional and supporting efforts to guarantee all students a living wage. With that, I will present the petition, and it has been delivered to the board. Thank you for your time and attention.
Brianna, thank you very much. We'll next hear from Candace Montgomery, followed by Javon Simmons. Candace? We will next hear from Javon Simmons, followed by Maisha Stewart via Zoom. So, Javon, are you with us? Okay. Let us then perhaps turn to Maisha Stewart via Zoom, and then Enid Warren Moore. Maisha, can you hear us? Okay, thank you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Good morning, Maisha. How are you?
Good, there we go.
Good.
Good morning.
good morning. Please proceed.
Sure, thank you for your time today. I would like to speak in favor of Chair Vassar. I've known her for almost 30 years. We joined our illustrious sorority together, and I've seen the whole of her. And when I say that, I've seen her, I know her as a mother, a wife, a soror, a leader, an educator, and a professional. She called me when I lost my mother this year, because unfortunately she knows that pain. I know her personality, and clearly anyone that entertains any type of sideshow drama does not know her. Instead of focusing on the issues that the brave women that spoke before me have presented. Is Rima kind and thoughtful? Yes. Is she brilliant, passionate about education? And a force? Yes. Is she direct? Yes. That does not make her a bully. It means she has the backbone to handle whatever comes at her. It means you are uncomfortable in her life. It's her resiliency, her commanding presence that, quote unquote, threatens you, not her. And what a coincidence that a change was made recently to a chair being able to run for a second term based on seniority. Regarding the accusations against her, I was thrown off immediately by the hypocrisy. Chair Scott went to the news after acknowledging that that was against policy. If Chair Vassar is this horrible leader, why go to the news? Were we trying to bully her to resign? It won't work. Seems like it would have been easy to handle this internally if things were that bad. I'm not sure what was meant by it was you tried to handle it behind closed doors. Was there any actual proof, or are we supposed to just go by one person's letter? Rima is a fighter. She is fierce when it comes to doing everything she can to improve the educational system. She will not back down, nor should she. Chair Vassar, we love you through and through. And I have on a shirt that says, walk like the ancestors sent you, because they did. We love you. And everyone have a great day. Thank you.
Maisha, thank you very much. Our next speaker is Enid Warren Moore, followed by Stephanie Fagerman. Enid, are you here? We will move on to Stephanie Fagerman. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Board members, when you were running for office,
you were running on a platform that you would do what is good and what is right for the university, for students, and for the state of Michigan. You were elected by people of the state of Michigan to do what is right and what is good for the university, its students, and the state of Michigan. I'm standing here today in support of the letter written by Brianna Scott requesting the removal of, or resignation rather, of Rima Vassar. When you guys look at this letter and the facts, we would like you to do what is right and what is good for the university, its students, and the state of Michigan. This is not about party. This is not about race. This is about what is good for the university and its students and the state of Michigan. You guys are charged with a great responsibility. We appreciate the work that you've been doing. Please keep these things in mind. Do what is right and good for the university, its students, and the state of Michigan. Thank you all so much for hearing me today.
Stephanie, thank you very much. We'll next hear from Tyriana Leslie, followed by Mike Balow. Tyriana, are you with us? Good morning.
Good morning. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Good morning, I'm Jordan Roebuck, parliamentarian for the Black Students Alliance. When I received news of Trustee Brianna...
Are you reading on behalf of Tyriana?
I am. Yes, I'm a member of the Black Students Alliance. She's unable to speak today. When I received news of Trustee Scott's 7-page paper calling for Dr. Rima's removal from the board, I was confused and terribly disappointed at the fact that this letter would be released during this specific time for Michigan State, especially to the news. A core obligation of this board is to ensure protection and safety for their students. How is this call to remove Dr. Rima reflective of the promise from the board to ensure safety for students? The only way to know if students feel safe on this campus is by asking them, and it is of the board to serve the students on this campus. With that said, if you ask any Black students sitting here, it is nothing but the direct opposite of the promise of this university in protecting us to remove the only Black woman to ever serve as chair of the MSU Board of Trustees, one that is an empowered Black woman and one that has an existing relationship with the Black Students Alliance. Calling her a bully and condescending is terribly antithetical to who she is at her core. My first encounter with Dr. Rima was when she made a presentation to us in the summer, the Black Students Alliance. Her presentation was about love. Ever since that, she has been nothing but kind, sweet, and someone who encourages me daily to be proud of my Blackness. Nobody else on this board of the trustees has individually reached out to me and told me to be proud of my Blackness besides Chairperson Vassar. Her and her husband have been nothing but supportive of me. Dr. Rima has advocated for the Detroit Promise and many more initiatives to support and bring Black students onto this campus. I cannot say the same for other trustee members. Claiming that she is at the core of why MSU's accreditation has been jeopardized is a ridiculous statement to make. Every single trustee member here has work to do. Putting a Black woman at the front of this is nothing more than labeling her as a scapegoat. When thinking about why in heaven's name the board would embarrass themselves yet another time this week, I can only think of one thing. This serves as a protection for the interim President Woodruff as the presidential search is supposed to be coming to an end. Woodruff, whose appointment as a provost was deemed a disappointment by the president of MSU's Black Faculty, Staff, and Administration Association. Woodruff, one who was criticized by Northwestern students of color for ignoring their concerns. Woodruff, who is yet to make a statement directly renouncing racial violence, which we asked her all summer to do. We are yet to speak with her in BSA in an individual meeting. How does keeping her as president reflect the values of racial equity in 2030? This is nothing but a diversion. By removing a fierce advocate for black equity, you guys are doing the opposite of protecting black students on this campus. How about you guys address the racial violence that's going on this campus? Putting Hitler on the jumbotron, addressing our walkout for which we had a town hall yesterday. Only two trustee members showed up. Rima was one of them. Let's address the sexual assault allegations that you continue to traumatize these women through year in and year out. I call for the board to prioritize these pending incidents rather than attack and attempt to put Rima as the scapegoat of this board's accreditation being jeopardized. Stop settling for mediocrity. I stand with Dr. Rima, and I demand better from the board. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll next hear from Mike Balo, followed by Sonia Mays. Mike.
Well, hell yes. I need everyone to take a deep breath and think about what's really going on here. Who has an interest in the board chair resigning? Who has been at the center of all the MSU controversy over the last decade? Like going rogue with the media during the Stanley resignation. Diane Byram. How in the world could former Governor Jim Blanchard and U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow immediately call for the resignation of our sitting board chair with no due process and only allegations from one other trustee to go on? Could it be that one current board member is the personal friend of each and was able to call in favors last week? Diane Byram, which sitting trustee has been steadfast in her opposition to releasing 6,000 documents that two different Michigan attorneys general have called for? Diane Byram. Who desperately wants to gain proxy control of this board? Chair seat again to control the hiring of the next MSU president and to ensure that those documents never see the light of day. Diane Byram. Isn't it interesting that the immediate chorus of calls for resignation came from the Byram Lansing insider crew? Let's take a roll call. Melanie Foster, Joel Ferguson, Diane Byram. The Lansing insider crew is beside themselves as someone that they can't control as the chairperson who is trying to bring long-needed transparency to this board, something that will threaten their reputation even if it finally gives justice to the survivors. Where is the faculty senate? They too have joined the chorus of the kangaroo court. No due process here, just immediate calls for resignation based on some shaky allegations. They've abandoned the trust of the majority of our good faculty, just like Dr. Woodruff abandoned the truth regarding Dean Gupta, the MSU swim team, Title IX, and her duty to the survivors. This smells like a planned, orchestrated hit job with the motive of controlling the presidential hire and the continued blockage of justice for the survivors. Let's look at just a couple of these misdeeds that were contained in Trustee Scott's letter. One, that Trustee Vassar was communicating with the AG on fulfilling the AG's request to release the documents. And two, that she fought for transparency by releasing the Quinn Emanuel report. Excuse me, those are charges? For the first time in memory, a board chair was fulfilling their constitutional duty. MSU obviously has the governor's attention now, so I asked the governor to get involved and compel the release of the 6,000 documents and do the investigation. Find out who knew what and when. The governor can call for this immediately. Of course, give due process to all in the investigation, including all current and past trustees. Then we'll really see who needs to step down from the board. Look deeper here. Ladies and gentlemen, look deeper. Everything here is related. See the truth for what it is. The Byram legacy will be one of deflection, deception, and destruction. Turn away from it toward the light. If you want to get rid of a trustee, just make sure it's the right one.
Thank you very much, Mike. Our next speaker will be Sonia Mays, followed by Christopher Raymond. Sonia, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm here today in support of Dr. Rima Vassar and her leadership of this esteemed body. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sonia Mays, and I am the CEO of Develop Detroit and an elected Board of Education member of Detroit's public school system. It was through my own education leadership work that I first met Dr. Vassar. Over the past few years, she has proactively engaged me with information and perspective on ways to improve public education outcomes in Detroit. As I got to know her, I found that Dr. Vassar is deeply passionate about education. We've already heard that she's brilliant. She also consistently presented as someone who demanded that the needs of underserved students be urgently addressed by leadership. She pushed me to be a better leader. She is a change agent and is unafraid to push and fight against the status quo toward a more fair and equitable outcome. And she is brave in her fight for racial justice in academia. It takes an audacious person to stand within a decades-old institution and to demand and push for accountability. Change is not easy, and change can make entrenched stakeholders deeply uncomfortable. But for people and institutions in need of leadership, of new leadership and improvement, change agents are often necessary, and their boldness is essential. I urge this body to reflect on why it elected Dr. Vassar as its chair 10 months ago. I call on this body for objectivity in how it moves forward. I implore this body to cast aside the further politicizing of its leadership, to cast off media rumor mongering and some of the racially coded character assassinations that I have heard. I implore you to focus on fact finding, and I challenge this body to recognize that change is necessary for MSU and to recognize that this necessary change will leave some uncomfortable and many embarrassed. I ask these things because so much more than Dr. Vassar's tenure as chair is at stake. I am not an MSU graduate. In fact, I'm a University of Michigan graduate. But despite our friendly rivalry, I take no satisfaction whatsoever in what Michigan State has gone through the last few years, none. As a taxpayer and as an education policy advocate, I'm frustrated to have watched this university, this great university, lurch from crisis to crisis. The state of Michigan is in a hyper-competitive race for talent, jobs, and residents. As a state, we're losing ground. And getting back to greatness here is what is required. It's going to require consistent and focused leadership of this body. Stay relentlessly focused on the big picture. Please continue to take steps to identify systemic issues. Continue to prioritize transparency and restoring public trust. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sonia, thank you. We'll next hear from Christopher Raymond, appearing via Zoom, and then Alec McCree, also appearing via Zoom.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Christopher, we can. Good morning.
Great, thank you. Thanks for allowing me to speak with you today. My name is Chris Raymond. I'm a 1988 graduate of the Broad College. Since matriculating to MSU almost 40 years ago, I've loved this institution. I've made regular and significant donations for the past decade or so and have served on the advisory board of the Financial Markets Institute, which is part of the Broad College, dedicating my time and expertise, while at the same time, through my role as a senior leader at a number of financial institutions in Chicago, I've hired or helped with the placement of a lot of scholars from that elite program. My daughter currently attends this fine institution, and I could not be more proud of that. I come before you today to urge you to do what we know has already been urged by many dismayed alumni like myself, and that's to take action now to reinstate Dean Gupta to his role as the Dean of the Broad College. I've known Dean Gupta for some time now, and his track record of stewardship of the Broad College speaks for itself. The reputation of the Broad College and Broad graduates, at least in the circles in which I travel, has grown immensely over his tenure. So I won't rehash all the events of Dean Gupta's case, as they are pretty well known, but in that 100-plus page Quinn Emanuel document commissioned by you, funded by you, and submitted to this board over 7 months ago, the conclusion and the correct course of action couldn't be more clear. I'll just take one quote. The personnel actions taken against Gupta appear disproportionate, out of sequence with the underlying investigation, and based on a factual record that includes errors and omissions of relevant information and context. And while I'm quoting, I found a comment made by Governor Whitmer earlier this week to be particularly poignant. Quote, we deserve leaders who will act with integrity and make sure the institution is a lot more important than any one person's aspirations, viewpoints, or agenda. Bravo, Governor. I could not agree more. Now, I understand this board has a lot on its plate with all that's come up since Dean Gupta's case, but that does not diminish your duty to address both his case and the clear lack of institutional control that allowed this situation to happen in the first place. Our university, our beloved university, is floundering due to lack of leadership. From my direct experience and from the success that the Broad College has enjoyed, Dean Gupta brings that very attribute to his role. Folks, people are watching. Do the right thing here. If not for the benefit of the Broad College, do it for the benefit of the university, as any top talent target for any role is going to want assurances that his or her employment will be handled with integrity, transparency, and honor. Reinstate Dean Gupta now and begin the process of restoring the trust, honor, and integrity for which true Spartans are so well known. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Much appreciated. Our next speaker is Alec McCree, followed by Devin Woodruff. Alec, I think you're joining us via Zoom. Can you hear us?
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
We can indeed. Please proceed, Alec.
Great. Thank you. Good morning. Dear Board of Trustees, my name is Alec McCree, and I've been a Spartan for over 36 years. I have served on multiple boards at the Business School and the MSU Foundation Board for 14 years. I am also a proud parent of an MSU sophomore, and over the past 14 months, I have written and spoken to the board several times about their fiduciary responsibilities and that of Michigan State University Administration to provide Dean Sanjay Gupta his due and fair process. The board alumni are dumbfounded by not only the wrongful dismissal of Dean Gupta, but by the lack of any correction to his wrongful dismissal by then Provost Woodruff. The Broad alumni question the willingness of this board to continue to allow the disparagement of our great business school dean, who led the largest school at MSU with record alumni involvement and amazingly had seven of the top academic programs by rankings at MSU. I was deeply hurt last week when I was on campus meeting with students at the business school. Students I spoke with still think Dean Gupta sexually assaulted someone because of the email they read from President Stanley and Provost Woodruff. This isn't the first time I've heard this. I heard it last fall from alumni who met with then Provost Woodruff and her staff. It wasn't until I forwarded them the Quinn and Manger report did they see the truth. This university, the current administration, and the Broad College of Business still has not set the record straight. There was never a follow-up email after the Quinn and Manger report came out stating the facts. There has never been a public apology to Dean Gupta and his family. This makes Broad alumni so disappointed in MSU because they know Dean Gupta is a great leader and a person of the highest integrity, which is more than I can say for the current administration, which has brought countless scandals and costly lawsuits to our university. I find it incredulous that the university has not settled the Dean Gupta matter when the facts are so clear. But I guess that is what happens when you ask those who committed the wrongful dismissal to fix it. True leaders admit when they are wrong. I'm asking again, let's do what is the best for the Broad School, the Broad students, and the university and reinstate Dean Gupta. And to the Broad member, or to the board members, former board members, who are arguing to suppress transparency, Byram, Scott, Foster, Ferguson, what are you trying to hide? Without Quinn and Manger report being released, we wouldn't have known that President Woodruff and certain staff members lied, omitted relevant information and content, interfered in an OIE investigation as against MSU agreement and Department of Justice. The only people who actively fight against transparency are those who have things to hide. So thank you to Dr. Vassar and the other board members for fighting for the release of the Quinn and Manger report and increased transparency. Now it's time for this board to release the NASA papers so that the victims, their families, and the entire MSU community can finish healing. I asked Diane Byram and Brian Quinn, why are you so afraid to release these papers? This has been the trend with other issues at MSU for far too long. Why do certain board members and certain administrators want to hide the facts? Maybe it's time for the governor to look at the practice of transparency at MSU and remove those board members who don't believe in it and those who do not. It is time for you to go, Diane Byram.
Thank you very much. The next speaker will be Devin Woodruff, followed by Andrew Horde. Devin, are you with us? Good morning, Devin.
Good morning. Good evening, board members, faculty, staff. Before driving into my address, I'd like to take a moment to recognize and express the collective gratitude that Black Student Alliance we have for Dr. Rima Vassar, for her unwavering support and leadership and dedication as our chair, her commitment to fostering an environment for respect and inclusivity, and understanding that inspiration to all of us serves as a foundation for change. She's someone that just displays love in her interaction with students as no other in terms of with trustees. But our campus is at a melting pot of cultures, background, beliefs, and dreams. It is a diversity that enriches our experiences, broadens our horizons, and fuels and shares our vision for progress. However, as we gather here today, there are shadows of intolerance, prejudice, and hatred. Nonviolent hate crimes are lacking in physical aggression. They carry a weight of emotion and psychological harm that deeply scare individuals and scare and fracture our community. However, recent stats paint a troubling picture. In this past academic year alone, we have witnessed a 15% increase in nonviolent hate crimes on campus. This isn't just a number that are for students, but are for peers. These ramifications go beyond an individual. They affect us collectively, sowing mistrust and discomfort. In the past decade, based upon enrollment, the racial equity of Black students have been nothing but disappointment. There's a reason for that. We don't feel safe. Based on enrollment of this year, it is the highest it's been since 2015. We have the most diverse student body we have ever had, but this has not applied to Black students. Based on the entering class, Black students have stayed stagnant over the last decade, while over race has stayed stagnantly increased. Thus, I propose to you all to work with Black Student Alliance on creating a no hate crime, no violence accountability on campus ordinance. The objective of this ordinance is simple but profound: to ensure every member of our community feels safe, respected, and free from any form of hatred and prejudice by implementing a clear reporting mechanism, because the university right now does not have a mechanism for if a student is found of discrimination, transparent investigation, and fair repercussions for sending a clear message that hate has no place here. I understand that freedom of speech is the right we all cherish, but there is a stark difference between expressing one opinion and weaponizing words to harm them based on race, gender, religion, and protected characteristics. This ordinance is not about silencing voices, but it's about amplifying the voices of love, unity, and respect to those who are hated. Esteemed board members, history has taught us that inaction can lead to consequences. As custodians of this institution, we have the power and the duty to enact change, to send a clear message to our community. In conclusion, let our legacy not be one of complacency, but of courage to challenge the status quo and to confront hatred head on. I urge the Board of Trustees to work with student leaders and the Black Student Alliance on crafting a no-hate, no-crime-violence accountability on campus ordinance, and in doing so, taking a definitive action and stand against hate. Thank you for your time.
Kevin, thank you very much. We'll next hear from Andrew Horde, followed by Joe Kovach. Andrew?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Interim President and trustees, thank you very much for your time this morning. I'll be very quick with this. Joran Vandersloot came out recently in talking about the death of Natalie Holloway. That was 18 years. And seriously, in all that time, the parents of Natalie Holloway came out and made it clear what happened to that death. These survivors need to understand what happened with regards to the Nassar situation. The same thing, we need to know what happened with the Mel Tucker situation. This has now put yet another black stain on this institution. We cannot tolerate that anymore. And I hate having to answer that in front of all my friends, especially my U of M friends. So please, let's do the right thing. Let's release the papers. Let's get to the bottom of all those situations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We'll next hear from Joe Kovach, followed by Tom Munley via Zoom.
Good morning. I'm Joe Kovach, and I'm a recent alum. And I don't want to be here. I live 500 miles away. But this is embarrassing, quite frankly. Seeing the university in the news about sexual misconduct again is reprehensible. Trustees once again releasing individual statements to the news to get on the front page for a scandal is embarrassing. Our governor having to answer to questions about changing the state constitution to take the vote away from citizens and make your position appointed because of the absolute dysfunction of this board is extremely embarrassing. The entire community, alumni, students, staff, and faculty are deeply embarrassed of this university that we love so deeply. Every week we are in a new headline. Every week our degrees feel worth less and less. There was a reason the entire community had no confidence in you last year, and I'm extremely disappointed in this board because it appears that nothing has changed again, and I'm up here again asking you to work together again. Get it together, because this has never, ever been about you as individuals. This is about Spartans, and we deserve better. Start taking public votes. Start making choices for us instead of to protect yourselves or for your own interests. Release the 6,000 documents and learn how to function as a public board of trustees that we can trust, or just resign already. Thank you.
We're next going to hear from Tom Munley via Zoom and then Kayla Williams via Zoom. So I just want to sort of go down the order of the speakers list, and then with the capacity issues, we'll come back.
I just wanted to say that I'm speaking for Enid Warren Moore. She wasn't able to get in on the Zoom.
So I want to kind of go down the list, and then we will come back. Thank you very much. Tom Munley. Tom, are you with us? Tom, are you with us? Okay, we will.
Yeah, with a technical difficulty because you just texted me, so make sure you give it a shot.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Many of you know me as one of the leaders of the Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive, although I am here to address the board on a matter that I consider far more important than the reinstatement of swimming and diving, and that's board integrity. Trustee Scott, your recent letter, which makes several allegations against Dr. Rima and calls for her to resign, is hypocrisy at its finest. The irony of the fact that you didn't even follow the procedure outlined by the board for such allegations while criticizing Dr. Rima for not following board policies only adds to the absurdity of your action. But let me start with one of the more salacious allegations, that Dr. Rima's ride on a donor's private jet might result in some undue influence is laughable, especially in comparison to a trustee who has invested in real estate with a partner. I wonder, Trustee Scott, when it comes to the building at 880 First Street, which you bought with former Trustee Joel Ferguson, how much undue influence does he have over you? Does Joel Ferguson have enough undue influence to get you to change your mind on standing up for the survivors and releasing the emails? Does he have enough undue influence on you to get you to vote on the modifications to the Trustee Emeriti policies in September of 2021, which still allowed him to personally benefit? When the 880 First Street property requires money, does he actually make a capital call to you? If not, does that curry good favor with you to take the actions he wants to see, even though he is no longer on the board? I do wonder how much capital it has taken to sustain a project announced roughly 4 years ago, but still isn't leasing units as far as I can tell. But let's move on and talk about name, image, and likeness. No, I'm not talking about athletics. I'm talking about your name. Isn't using your name on the website 880firststreet.com not following the exact same thing you criticized Dr. Rima for? The board should be consistent with its application of the rules. Your name, her image, seems the same, except you actually have a financial interest in that property. Lastly, did you use your position as trustee or any of the relationships you built as a result of being a trustee to secure the portion of the $6 million in state revitalization and placemaking grants which were awarded by the City of Muskegon to the 880 First Street project in September of 2022? Because doing so would not only have benefited you personally, but also Joel Ferguson. All of this leads me to call for Trustee Dan Kelly to open an investigation into the extent to which you are influenced by Joel Ferguson. Let me move on to a different call to action related to a more troubling board member behavior by former Chair Diane Byram. The board should call for the immediate resignation of Diane Byram from the board. Her admission that she claimed principal residence exemptions for her two homes is a criminal act. The Michigan Department of Treasury principal residence exemption affidavit contains the following statement. I certify under penalty of perjury that I own and occupy as a principal residence on the date stated in line 11, yada, 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 and that all the information contained on this document is true and correct to the best of my knowledge. The penalty for perjury in Michigan is 15 years. You admitted you had two residences where you claimed the PRE. Thus, you have admitted you perjured yourself when you and your husband completed the PRE affidavit for your Lake Michigan house. This is not a paperwork issue. This is a criminal act. Any cleansing of the board should begin with Diane Byram. Anyone who's perjured themselves for their own financial benefit at the expense of fellow taxpayers should not serve on the board of a public university. Lastly, President Woodruff, I hope to see your name on the ballot next year. Your dealings with our group has proven that you're an excellent politician. All talk, no promises, and no real action. Telling us to go out and raise what would have been the third largest gift in MSU history, which became impossible with the Mel Tucker situation, makes me chagrined. On a brighter note, I'd like to thank Trustees Deno, Kelly, and Vassar for their continued measured leadership. You give us hope that all is not lost. And to Dr. Rima, keep fighting. Don't let the Byram Lansing cabal force you out. Release the emails, reinstate Dean Gupta, reinstate Swim and Dive. Just do the right things. It doesn't have to be this hard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll next hear from Kayla Williams via Zoom, and then James Thurston also appearing via Zoom. Kayla, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can. Good morning.
Perfect. Good morning. My name is Kayla Williams, and I'm here on the third anniversary of the cut of the swim and dive programs to talk to you about the future of collegiate Olympic sports. For those of you keeping score, this is the 21st consecutive Board of Trustees meeting that the Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive has had speakers for. Admittedly, the diversity of speakers has narrowed, as this has become a far more politically charged issue than I could have ever imagined, but here we are. My overall message today is one of concern for the future of Olympic sports, but I must include a discussion of the swim and dive cuts as the most recent and relevant cause for concern in this matter. Why am I here? Why am I still fighting, right? I am here because I believe these opportunities provide more benefit to students than many of you can even know. It's no secret that football and basketball are the only two sports that generate any real revenue beyond tuition dollars non-scholarship athletes pay. I understand how business works and that even in nonprofits like this university, revenue generation for reinvestment will be prioritized. At the rate things are changing in college athletics today, however, I have very real fears that the advancement of revenue generation will very quickly come at the expense of Olympic sports opportunities. Title IX can only help so much when it comes to protecting these valuable opportunities, and if left unchecked, will result in opportunities being handed out haphazardly on the sidewalks of Shaw Lane, like the time the women's rowing team approached me and other random passersby about joining their team while I was in school. President Woodruff, our dialogue started out so promising. What happened? After former Trustee Foster declared that there was no path forward for reinstatement, we were so grateful for your willingness to engage with us mere weeks later on a phone call to dispel the inaccuracies that led to that statement. You had spoken with the student athletes at this point and communicated to them the need for $6.5 million in operating expense to go half and half with the athletic department to facilitate a return of the programs over a five-year period. This seemed reasonable. Fast forward to an in-person meeting in June, and suddenly the ask had increased to $20 million to support facility improvements for the Health and Wellness Center. I personally raised concerns regarding this 3.5 month timeline ahead of us to achieve a 4 times increase in the initial ask, and in your optimism, you said that you believed we could do this. When we all understandably did not meet this target, you invited yourself to a working session we had scheduled with another university unit to tell us that since we did not meet the funding target, reinstatement was not an option at this time due to scheduling challenges with a shared facility. I hope the analysis I sent you and the board using MSU's own facility use data has disabused you of that notion. If you missed it, I'm happy to send the data again. You have some very consistent and persistent groups that keep showing up at these meetings. I would hope I am not the one to advise you all that in any effective communication strategy involves getting out in front of a story and controlling the narrative. It appears some of these issues have gotten away from you. To those of you in positions of power at the front of the room today, what was it that spurred you to take action and caused you to run for these positions in the first place? Why are you here, and what did you hope to accomplish? Have you achieved what you set out to achieve? Public participation at this point indicates concerns on behalf of the public for where MSU is headed, and what will you do to correct course? Thank you.
Thank you, Taylor. We'll next hear from James Thurston, appearing via Zoom, and then Mindy Arbaugh. James, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to participate remotely. In 2023, we have had collaborative conversations about the Swim and Dive program. In fact, we were in the midst of a very collaborative discussion, as Kayla mentioned, before that meeting was interrupted by President Woodruff, who was not invited to that meeting. Ms. Woodruff mentioned to us in December 2022 about basing decisions upon data. To that end, I have provided you with a pro forma budget for the reinstatement of the program based entirely upon Michigan, Ohio State, Indiana, NCAA FRS data, with the only inputs being MSU's own tuition and room and board costs. As we have said before, the program would indeed be profitable to the university. Over the next 30 years, at 60% in-state participation and $11 million total profit, at the more likely 40% in-state participation, a $33 million profit over that period. No program, no ability to offset the general student population costs of the new facility, like the grad students who spoke today. No, we are not taking spots from other students, as your own data at the last board meeting showed an increased attendance of 3,000 students over the last 4 years. Once again, Mr. Verbeekman was wrong. In my own personal discussions with Advancement, my interests in the universities are aligned. I am willing to make an irrevocable bequest pledge in the millions that I've previously discussed here with you. However, for some reason, these do not count in the eyes of Ms. Woodruff, but asking us for one of the largest cash donations in school history is apparently okay. I have also provided to you in my submission the photo shared on MSU's Facebook page announcing the 2023-2024 rowing team, which shows roughly 75 rowers. Now, is it possible that these figures for last year provided to the Gender Equity and Review Director were 94 rowers? Maybe, but the more likely answer is that those figures were manipulated since the NCAA women's rowing average is only 54 athletes. To my chagrin, it's incredibly disappointing that the nature of the GERD meetings were dubiously labeled internally as diversity, equity, inclusion efforts and not what they really were. What is clear is that Jen Smith and Alexis Bresky will definitely have some explaining to do if, and likely when, this year's rowing participation figures miraculously show up in the 90s. These are the facts, and they're incontrovertible. We look forward to discussing these matters with the new president, as Ms. Woodruff has pulled her name out of the race. We have an Olympic-caliber coach, National Coaching Association support, a budget, and a pool that can be funded in part if Mr. Howell or Mr. Gore are encouraged to get in a room together. All we need is three letters.